This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by TickTix. Buying tickets shouldn't be anonymous. We are built for fans, by fans. Available on Android and iOS. Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
I'm Dan Stevenson, once again alongside my co-host Matt DeBorg, and this week we're back and we have exciting news. The Calgary Flames have clinched a playoff spot for the 2017 Stanley Cup playoffs. Matt, when we look back at the beginning of the season, did you think we'd be saying that?
Well, before the season started, yeah, I did. We were split. You thought we'd be just outside the playoffs, and I thought we'd just be inside. And it honestly could have went either way. Like, it took a 10-game winning streak and some luck along the way to get to where they are, but they're in, and now it's just a matter of sorting out who they will be facing in round one. With the current standings and only 3 games remaining, it looks like Anaheim, Edmonton, or Chicago will be the opponent. Weird things would have to happen for Calgary to play San Jose.
And we talked a little bit about that last week. Any thoughts on those opponents? Anyone you'd like to see more than another?
I'd probably prefer Chicago, just not for the fact like, oh, we're going to beat Chicago. I don't honestly see the Flames winning the Stanley Cup this year because we still have a couple of holes in the lineup. So if you take the objective of winning the Stanley Cup out of the equation, what best is for the team moving forward? Which is the best opportunity for the players to gain that experience to know what it takes to reach that next level? And like, if they play Anaheim, it's one of those situations that Anaheim just seems to have our number, which is evidenced by the Honda Center nonsense that's been going on since 2004. Edmonton, if they beat Calgary, well, Connor McDavid's great. So you're not really going to learn too much about what it takes from a team that it's taken 10 years to make the playoffs. So for me, I would go with Chicago just for the fact that they've been there. They know what it takes. So if Calgary can beat Chicago, that would be awesome. But if they lose, they know what steps they need to take in order to get to that next level where they can actually face a team like Chicago in the playoffs and win.
And you and I had talked last week, and we pretty much, I think, both agreed that as soon as the Flames hit the Blackhawks, they're done.
Probably.
You know, I think,
like, of the three, I actually think that Chicago may be the easiest opponent for us, and that's just due to Chicago's lack of forward depth. But they're a good team. All three of the teams are pretty good. So, like, Edmonton's probably the weakest on paper, but they have the whole Connor McDavid factor. So there's not really any definite, oh, this team's going to be a cakewalk this year, unfortunately, for Calgary.
But that makes the playoffs all that much more interesting for us as Flames fans.
Yeah, and, like, if you look at it from the other side of the coin, like, I'm sure that Chicago would rather face Nashville than us. I'm sure they'd rather face St. Louis than us because of, like, if you delete the first 16 games of the season, Calgary has been one of the top teams in the NHL. So whereas Nashville and St. Louis have kind of waffled for most of the year. So it's one of those situations where even the good teams are going to be going up against good teams. Like, there's not really, like, other than San Jose, who's been struggling lately and just lost Joe Thornton, there's not really any team that is obviously bad in the Western Conference. Like, there are a couple in the Eastern Conference, like Toronto and Boston are not very good overall, but even Ottawa's not that great, but the rest of the teams are full mark. So, like, there are some easy spots in the playoffs in the East, but there's not really any soft cakewalk teams in the West.
No, for sure. But, you know, at the same time, like you said, we have a young team. We're not expected to win the Stanley Cup. Why not take on the best teams? Why not see if we can do it? And it gives us that measuring stick for next year when we come back at the beginning of the season and the coach can say, you know what, guys, remember these are the things that went down and these are the things that we couldn't do, and we need to improve these.
Yeah, and you also have to figure that if the Flames do somehow figure out a way to beat Chicago, which could happen, and I think this year any team in the West can beat any other team, if they do, then they'll face the winner of Minnesota-St. Louis, which to me is a lot easier of an opponent than the other of Anaheim or Edmonton.
I look at it this year that I think no matter who you're playing, your teams get progressively easier as we go on.
Yeah, I agree.
And Brian Burke, our president of hockey operations here in Calgary, he's always had a philosophy. It's just 3S philosophy. He said to win the Stanley Cup, you need to beat one team with size, another with speed, and a third who has the special teams and the skill. And the fourth team you'll beat is a hybrid of all three. So, you know, looking at the Western Conference, I can see all of those teams in there. And I'm trying to figure out when teams are playing us, where we sit in there. Matt, which one of those do you think Calgary would fall under? The size, the speed, the special teams and skill, or the hybrid of all three?
I think Calgary would kind of fall in the all three category. Like, they have a lot of finesse on the team. They have size, obviously. You look at some of the forwards the Flames have. Like, it's not going to be fun in the first round for whoever our opponent is. Like, I think that whoever the Flames do play, if they do beat Calgary, they're not going to go on, because I think Calgary is going to beat the ever-loving crap out of them physically. But, and special teams, ever since, like, the Flames were basically 30th in both, they've been very good. I think they're now 11th and 12th in each category right now, something like that. And that's including when they were that huge, like, month and a half stretch where they were terrible on special teams. So I think Calgary is kind of a little bit balanced in that regard. Perhaps not the fastest team, but they do have some speed.
I also think that sometimes special teams get overrated a little bit in the playoffs, because we tend to see that refs like to put their whistles away. The refs like to just let us play and, you know, not really call as many penalties as we usually do. So I think that, yeah, I think sometimes it's more special teams that are going to win you the – or, sorry, less special teams that are going to win you the games, more 5-on-5.
Yeah, like, if you have Ovechkin, like, obviously that's going to be a weapon that's awesome to deploy on the special teams. And there's a few teams that have similarly good weapons, but if that was the be-all and end-all, Washington would have more than one cup, or a cup at this point, and that hasn't happened yet. So you need to have, like, it's important, like, especially if you do get a power play in a vital time, like, if you can score on that, like, it can change a game and a series, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Like, you need to have the defense of discipline in order to actually succeed. And one thing that you could always never accuse Washington of over the last decade was defensive awareness.
Why don't we look at the week that was for the Calgary Flames? It was the start of a sort of back-to-back series for all of our California opponents. The Calgary Flames had the LA Kings, the San Jose Sharks, and the Anaheim Ducks all visit us here at the Dome for our final homestand of the season. And then this coming week, we'll be flip-flopping and visiting all those teams in California. So, Matt, let's look at the first game of the week, which is against the LA Kings, as one I think we all thought the Flames would probably do pretty well in, considering the last couple times we played them. And I don't know about you, completely opposite results of what I was hoping for.
Well, this was a game where the Flames got in their own way. Like, they should have won that game, really. Like, they were the better team for the first half of the game, and it was tied until late in the second period. And they were too focused on settling scores on the ice instead of focusing on the actual game itself. And credit to Los Angeles, they needed 2 points, and they got it, which didn't end up actually helping them at all, but as they were eliminated yesterday. But I don't know. Like, Calgary just seemed to, like, you saw it with Tkachuk trying to fight and getting a penalty for dropping the gloves, and then actually fighting, and then attempting to nail Doughty in the second period, which he ducked. it just seemed like they were more focused on being, oh, we're going to beat you up. Like, this is a playoff series, not realizing that this is a team that doesn't actually matter at all to Calgary. So, like, you should just treat a team like that like you would, say, New Jersey. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I think that, like you said, the emotions were there. And I think where Calgary needs to learn, especially being a younger team like the Flames are, is how to deal with those emotions and that physicality. It seemed like every time there's a little bit of physicality or somebody on LA's team got a little chippy, Calgary had to respond back. And I think it took them off their game of playing, you know, Calgary Flames hockey and just kind of made it a retaliatory effort all game.
Yeah, and it's a good lesson for Matthew Tkachuk, especially before the playoffs, to know where that line is. Like, yeah, it's going to be great to go and hit and abuse players in the playoffs. Like that, Ferland did, he destroyed Vancouver a couple years ago. But you need to know where that line is, where you're getting in your own way. And he, in that game, was getting in his own way and getting in the team's way of being successful. And the whole team was kind of following his lead, and things kind of spiraled out of control. So it's good that it happened in a nothing game that it doesn't matter. So at least now that can be addressed properly, and the team can deploy their system properly of attack in a literal sense in the playoffs, and how to control that aggression where you're getting the other team off their game and while not like getting yourself off your own game.
Yeah, and you know, I think credit to both teams in this one. Like you said, Calgary didn't play a bad game. They didn't play a great game, but it wasn't a bad game. I think that the Kings' ability to clog up the middle really made it hard for the Flames, especially the way they're used to playing against the Kings. There was a lot of times the Kings just weren't letting us in front of the net the way that we were expecting to get good quality shots off.
No, and if LA is playing their game where they're doing their own thing, like, they're a very slow team, and you need to just beat them with speed and just skate around and through them. And the Flames were not really focusing on doing that. And that's one of the main reasons why they lost. Like, they just weren't doing it right, and it cost them the game. But again, it's a nothing game. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. So, like, there's no real long-term harm done, but good lessons can be learned moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think when I look at this, the last note I had here, I thought that in this game, LA's best players played like their best players. Calgary's didn't. And I think, like you were saying, Calgary's just got caught up in whatever Tkachuk was doing. And it really sort of made them not play their game. And even a guy like Jerome McGinley, you know, former Flames captain, got 2 points. And I didn't even think that, you know, he played a great game, but it was just that their best players were better than our best players.
Yeah, and again, it was actually nice to see in what could have been his last game in Calgary, getting a Gordie Howe hat trick. Like, how fitting, and the first star of the game. Like, that was fitting, at least. Like, that was a nice thing to see if you're an Aginla fan. But it happens. Like, you're going to have games like that throughout the course of a season where just stupid things build on each other and it culminates in a loss, and you just have to stop the stupid from extending beyond.
And like you said, Matt, it was good that it was a game that didn't mean a whole lot to the Calgary Flames at this point.
Yeah, and realistically, the Flames are going to be one of the wild card teams. And like, even if they won that game, they were still likely going to be one of the wild card teams anyway. So it matters, but not really.
It matters in terms of gaining points. But unlike the next 2 games of the week, the Flames weren't playing a potential playoff opponent. I think it was more important that we really came with our A game in the next two games, because these are ones that were going to be against potential, you know, playoff opponents. We want to show off what we can do.
Exactly. And if you're going to have good games, you want to be doing it against the teams that you could eventually meet in the postseason.
Well, let's talk about those two games. The first one was the San Jose Sharks visiting the Flames here at the Dome, and five different Flames scored as Elliott made 36 saves to help the Flames clinch a playoff spot in a 5-2 victory over the San Jose Sharks. We had Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Matt Stage, and Alex Chiasson, and Sam Bennett all score for the Flames. I don't know about you. I thought in this one, the Flames had a poor first period. They turned over a lot of pucks in the first period. They seemed kind of, shaky. Like they were still coming off that bad LA game and needed to shake the rust off. But I thought the second game was much better, or the second period, sorry, was much better for these guys. They didn't stop working. They played hard. And that's really, I think, what got them back into the game. I mean, they scored three of their goals in that period, but I think it was their work in the second that got them back in.
I agree. And the first period, I think that would be video room session material for sure. I can't even remember how many turnovers they had in that period, but it seemed like it was in the 12-15 range just in that period alone, and just very sloppy. And again, getting in their own way. And after winning 10 games in a row, like, you're going to have a stretch of games where, like, you're still a good team, but you're going to have things screw up a bit. And, you know, that was in that period, it was one of those things where they were still making a similar type of mistake, but it, at least in this case, it didn't hurt them.
No, it was their 20th win in 27 games. I mean, they're winning, you know, a good number of games, much better than 500 hockey. And I think it was a good preview to see how we do against a team like the Sharks. I don't think the score necessarily reflects the game. I think a lot of the Flames' success came because of Brian Elliott. You could say this might be one of the few games this year, I would say, that he might have stolen for the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think the Flames played, you know, if we look at the 5-2 score, I don't think they played that much better than the Sharks. But,
well, actually, I'm going to dump on San Jose a bit. I honestly, like, if you weren't paying attention to what team you were watching, you would think that they were playing Dallas or something like that, like, or another bottom feeder. And, like, you wouldn't, watching that game, you weren't seeing a playoff caliber team there, and I don't understand, like, they were good earlier this season. I don't understand what happened to them to, like, completely fall off the face of the earth, but, like, if I'm any team in the playoffs, like, that's who I'm hoping I'm drawing in round one, because they're the only team that looks like they might be an easy team to beat.
Yeah, I don't know. We always see in the NHL season teams that go from, you know, top to bottom and teams that go from bottom to top. And if you look, we're one of those teams that went from bottom to top. The Flames, you know, were in the cellar for a while, and now they're a playoff team. And now we're seeing San Jose take a bit of a dip. So it all evens out in the end.
Yeah.
I still think that San Jose is veteran laden enough that I think come playoffs, they're going to surprise us in the first round. I think they'll choke. They always choke somewhere. But I think that they can make, just looking at the rest of the West,
I don't see it being a 4-game sweep for whomever their opponent is. But I'm not really, like, if I was betting, I wouldn't bet on them making it to round two, whether they play Edmonton, Anaheim, or one of the, well, yeah, it would be Edmonton or Anaheim, so, yeah, I just don't see, like, I am expecting whomever faces the Sharks to move on to round two.
I don't know. I can see them beating Edmonton. I just think they have enough defense, I think, that they might be able to rough McDavid up.
Yeah, and they do have size. It depends on, like, if they can bang McDavid around a bit, then they might be able to squeak through, but
just looking at their roster, I think they're the best position to do that.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
But yeah, so it was a decent game. The one thing I will say about this game is I think Sam Bennett had a fantastic game.
Actually, I'm going to give him a little bit more praise. He's had a great stretch from pretty much that Nashville game a month and a half ago, in the middle of February. And ever since then, when he dropped the gloves with Ryan Johansson, like, he had a really strong game there, and he's been picking it up more recently and looking like the player that the Flames drafted fourth overall, not the third line young guy that they've been having this season.
Yeah, you're totally right, and he's definitely been coming along for the last little bit, but I thought this game was really the pinnacle of that. Like, I think this might be the best Sam Bennett game I've seen with him wearing a Flaming C.
Well, no, that Florida game last year where he racked up four goals, that was awesome, but
I don't know, he was very offensive in that game, but I saw sort of, you know, the offensive, the defensive, I thought he was a much more complete player in this one.
Yeah, well, that's why, like, I haven't been too concerned about Bennett's numbers this year, because of the fact that he's learning how to basically be Michael Backlund, but with more offensive potential in there, and trying to become that good two-way center. And, like, it's always easy for an offensively skilled player to utilize offensive skill, but it's a different thing when you're an offensive player trying to learn how to be a shutdown defensive player. And so with him taking, like, the first 5 months of the season to improve enough on his defensive side of his game where he can then feel comfortable to add some offensive skill and becoming that more balanced player, it's a good thing. It's just, I know everybody's like, oh, well, he needs to have 50 plus points or otherwise he's a bust. And it's like, no, the Flames want him to be like a very good second line center, potentially a first line center. And the only way to do that is to actually get him to learn how to be that type of player.
And, you know, some people have said that if he's that sort of Michael Backlund, what a lot of people classify third line center, that two-way, I don't necessarily think that means he has to be in the bottom six either. There's a lot of teams, I think, that can benefit from, and I think the Flames are one of them, having a good two-way center on a second line where you've got, you know, a good winger and a good playmaker and a good two-way center. And,
well, like, if you
good sniper,
have a strong,
a good playmaker and a good two-way center.
Yeah, well, like, if you look at teams that have had offensive depth heading into playoffs, like, you look at Pittsburgh, the first time they won the Cup, they had Crosby, they had Malkin, and they had Jordan Staal as their first three centers. Well, all three were very good two-way players. Then you got Chicago with Taze. They had Boland, Ladd, and a handful of other guys cycling through the years up the middle. And again, lots of good two-way forwards. And Boston, it was the same thing with Bergeron. And not so much Sagan, but you know what I mean. Like, there's lots of skill and defensive ability. And usually teams need to have three centers that can do both things well. Not necessarily be a Selke candidate like Backlund should be. But, you know, like, a solid in order to... Because wingers are pretty much interchangeable in the NHL. Like, you can pick up a winger. You should be able to without much difficulty. Centers are always the hardest thing to get, especially good ones. And Flames fans are very familiar with that. Remember Iginla having, like, who's going to play with Iginla for the entire duration of his Flames career? So, you know, like, it's... Calgary is blessed by having three guys that are very good. Now it's... And possibly a fourth with Jankowski, who was named Rookie of the Month in the AHL this past month. They're doing it the right way, because you have to build from the middle out up front. And if you have those four spots covered, like, you can get all the rest of the pieces without much difficulty.
We're seeing more teams these days, too, that don't have, you know, necessarily one top scoring line, but two, maybe three. And I think the more you can have two-way centermen, especially in your lineup, the better you're going to do at shutting down those scoring lines. You can't put your third line or your fourth line, depending on which one's your shutdown line, up against all the scorers. So you need to blend that skill throughout the lineup.
Yeah, well, additionally, in the playoffs, when you're on the road, the other team gets the matchups that they want every faceoff. So, like, yeah, ideally you're going to have the 3M line against whomever the other team's first lines are, but they're going to avoid putting their best guys out against that line because they're so good defensively. So if you have a secondary line that's good defensively or a third line that's good defensively, then there's less chance for the other team to actually break through and be able to do anything, which ends up in winning more games and eventually winning the Stanley Cup. So all these things go hand in hand. It's no one thing in isolation.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully, like you said, it leads us to a Stanley Cup. But that's I still think that's a few years down the road.
Yeah, depending on how this year goes, they might be able to be an actual contender next year. A lot would have to happen, but it's possible.
Well, let's look at that possibility in the off season.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's
we'll have a lot to talk about at the draft and on July 1st when we go and do our development camp shows like we do every year.
Well, let's
we'll be talking a lot about what. What's going on with the team then?
There's
going
to be a lot of change and a lot of excitement this offseason. Let's finish up the week. Let's talk about the last game that the Flames played, and that was against our rivals from Anaheim, the team who we can't win in their barn, and we can't seem to beat them in ours right now either. The Anaheim Ducks took a 4-3 win over the Calgary Flames. I thought in general this was sort of what I expected. After the San Jose game, the Flames clinched. They weren't going to be trying as hard because they've already clinched, but this was not a great team effort. Everybody was making mistakes all the way up and down the lineup. I thought the first Dougie Hamilton penalty was a really dumb penalty. As soon as Hamilton took it, I knew, you know what, this is going to be a goal. And sure enough, Patrick Eves got his 30th of the year. The one Flame I guess I could really say stood out as being really good in this one was Versteeg. I think Versteeg and Elliott were the two guys that kept this game close.
Yeah. How would you say? I'm actually pleased with this game. Yeah, the Flames made a lot of mistakes, and they lost. But Anaheim is red hot. I think they've only lost two out of their last 12 games. They also have our number. And it took Calgary sabotaging themselves repeatedly all through the game for them to win in the last 3 minutes. That's encouraging because of the fact that I was not particularly scared by how Anaheim was playing. Like, usually it's like, oh crap, we're playing Anaheim. And it's like, oh, okay. It felt more like a San Jose game from like a couple years ago where like they're good, but they're not world beaters. And it just had that kind of a feel to it. It didn't feel like an Anaheim game at all to me, where you're just waiting for the shoe to drop on Getzlaff making a beauty pass across to a guy that's wide open, which I think he did in that game. But you know what I mean? Like, you're just waiting for the shoes to drop, and like, you know you're going to lose before the game starts, so like, how are they going to screw it up? I didn't get that feeling from this game. I thought it was a fairly balanced game throughout, and it just took the Flames making a lot of mental mistakes that allowed Anaheim to actually collect the 2 points.
But I guess, you know, if we're saying that Calgary's making a lot of mental mistakes, is it because Anaheim's getting in our head, or what's causing so many mental mistakes in this game? And if we do end up seeing these guys in the postseason, how do we prevent that again?
In terms of, I'm going to use a boxing analogy. If you're just sparring with the guy, you're not going to want to throw all your best punches to let the guy know what you got. So there is a distinct possibility that we're playing Anaheim in round one. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for them to think, oh, they're pushovers and they're making lots of mistakes. And some of them were really, like, Gaudreau's defensive awareness on that fourth goal was spectacularly bad. But, you know, those kind of mental mistakes go away. Like, it's... Ever since the winning streak ended, they've been just making more of those mental mistakes. But it's... Like, they do correct themselves. Like, it's like they'll have a bad game and then they'll follow it up by a good one. And I'm not too concerned. Like, I wouldn't actually be shocked if they won tomorrow in Anaheim.
I guess my overall assessment is, yes, they're making mistakes. And I don't agree with your analogy. I don't think we go out there unless they're trying to sabotage or trying to show that, oh, look, we're bumbling idiots here. You want to take us on? I think this is the Calgary Flames... Let's be honest. The Calgary Flames have had a rough season. The Calgary Flames have not been a playoff team all year. I think this is a team that makes mistakes. That's why they got themselves in some of the holes they're in. They went on a couple good runs. They got themselves back in. But there's a team that makes mistakes. And I think when you're playing against a team like Anaheim, who really put the pressure on us. I mean, I didn't think that we had a good 5-on-5 chance for the first 40 minutes of this game. When they really put the pressure on, they forced us to make mistakes. They forced us to make a lot of mistakes. And I think that like you said, the fact that we came back and we were able to keep it 4-3 shows we could fight through those mistakes, showed that we were still able to play our game. But the fact is, I think Anaheim forced us to do a lot of things we didn't want to do. And it took us out of our game. And that is part of that mental game you're going to see if there's a 7-game series here in the playoffs, is how do we keep our head down and play our game and not let them get to us?
Yeah, and we saw that 2 years ago when we faced Anaheim. Like, we saw them trying to abuse Anaheim like they did Vancouver, and it didn't work because Anaheim's not Vancouver. And Vancouver was much more of a finesse team where you could actually physically intimidate them, where Anaheim's a larger team and you hit them and it's like, okay, sure, you know, like, you hit me, good for you, you know. And... like, they didn't adapt to it. And, like, that's why they got blown out, frankly, in the first two games quite easily. And it took a while for them to adapt. Oh, we can't do that against them and expect to win. So
I think Anaheim's also a team that can play a lot of different styles. And that's why I think that they're a lot more dangerous than maybe we give them credit for. They can sort of adjust their style to whoever they're playing.
True. And... like, that's part of the reason why I wouldn't want to face them, especially in round one, just because of the fact that we're not quite as versatile as they are. And, like, if they need to play a physical game, they got bangers that can do the job. You need a finesse game, they got the skill to do that. And they have the speed to go with it. So, it's one of those things that Calgary... I think that game was largely... each team trying to, like, take a couple punches at each other and, like, feel each other out a bit without it being overly intense in the game. Like, it didn't seem like an overly chippy game. Just, like, each team was trying to figure out what area that the other team is especially weak in. And... credit to Anaheim, they did figure out that, oh, Englund and Bartkowski are not a very good defense pairing. So, you know, and they scored, I think, 3 or 4 times on them.
So, and I mean, let's be clear, everybody, even our best players, like Elliott made mistakes here. I mean, that fourth goal, Elliott shouldn't have given up that big of a rebound. And he knew it after. And when I talked to him in the dressing room afterwards, I mean, he was upset. He was upset by himself. He was upset by the way he played. Gullitson was upset by the whole team. And I think you're right. It's partly us making mistakes, but I think it was partly, too, that, okay, the pressure's off. We're in.
Yeah. Yeah, and plus you don't want to do stupid things and get hurt or have, like, weird stuff happen, like what happened to Joe Thornton, where an innocuous play ends up with him... seeming to suffer a severe knee injury and might end his season. So, you know, you don't want to run around and do stupid things either. So it's just a weird stretch of games where, like, neither team really has too much to play for other than slight positioning changes.
Well, Matt, you were mentioning the third pairing defense here, and I think this game of probably all the ones I can think of, probably the one that really stood out to me that, you know what, Matt Bartkowski, probably not an NHL defenseman. We've known that for a while. I mean, he was not brought in until late in the season. He was playing in the AHL. This is a kid who, and even the GM said it when we brought him in, he's brought in because of the expansion draft, and you need so many guys who played so many games unprotected. But after a game like that, where I think it's very obvious that, you know what, there's some holes there, if you're the Flames going onto this road trip, do you dress Bartkowski or do you give Rasmus Anderson, who's been with the Flames for a few weeks now, a look?
Well, honestly, if it was me, I'd sit both Englund and Bartkowski and have both Weidman and Anderson get into games at some point this week, just to see exactly what each of the guys have, so that way you're a little more educated in case of it being necessary. Like, say Bartkowski has a really bad game one, you know that, oh, Anderson played really well in that game against San Jose, say, and so let's throw him in there instead and see what he has. So, and yeah, Bartkowski kind of sucks, but it's one of those things that he's a seventh defenseman.
Well, but he's not. Just he's like, six. He's number six.
Oh, I know. But he is a number seven. We're using him as a number six because we don't have a number six. But realistically, he should be a number seven, and we're just stuck deploying him because Joki Paakka was not very good and was subsequently traded, and Dennis Weidman hasn't played well in a while either, so... And he's just as inconsistent from game to game.
Yeah, I don't know. If it was me, I think, you know, Raz is here. He's young. The young players, in my opinion, have always needed to play. So I'm really hoping that Raz gets some games or gets sent back to the A, because I don't think it's doing him any good just sitting on the bench.
Well, it doesn't hurt. Like, he's getting to practice with an NHL team, so... And knowing what it is to be an NHL player, and especially with his conditioning issues heading into this season, like this past off season, that he needs to learn those good habits from NHL players. So I think just being around NHL players is a net benefit, even if he isn't playing.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd rather see the kid playing. I mean, he's had a great season. I think that sometimes you can stunt a guy's growth by not getting him on the ice enough, and I just don't want to see that happen to him. So I totally understand where you're coming from, but that's what training camp's for. That's what, you know, they'll probably bring a whole bunch of these guys up for the playoffs. Right now, during the regular season, I think you got to play him.
Oh, I'm expecting him to make his NHL debut sometime this week.
And, you know, honestly, I don't see Bartkowski here next season. I think he was signed. No. He's on a two-way. I think he'll be that veteran guy along with Koska down in the AHL, and they'll help to lead a very young veteran defensive core for the Flames. So I'm hoping that Bartkowski soaks it in now and enjoys it, because I think he's going to be like the Mike Commodore. I think he's going to be very popular. He's here on the team, but after the one playoff run, you kind of never hear from him again.
Could very well,
you know,
be.
Commodore floated around the league for a few years and had some success, but I think a lot of his success was just based on that 0-4 run. Matt, you mentioned earlier Michael Backlund's name and the Frank J. Selke trophy in the same sentence, and this is something that some people have been talking about so far. For those that don't know, the Frank J. Selke trophy is awarded annually to the NHL forward who demonstrates the most skill in the defensive component of the game. That's how it's been officially titled. And on our site at firesidechat.ca, we'll post a link in the show notes for anyone who wants it. But there's an article from Michael Gold, who was on with me a few weeks ago co-hosting the show. And he simply titled the article, "Is it Michael Backlund's turn to win the Selke trophy?" And Michael makes a pretty good argument here. If we look at some of the guys who've won it in the past, and, you know, where Michael Backlund is against those guys. I think that Michael makes a very strong argument that Backlund should at least be in the consideration for it, if not win it. Matt, I believe you've read the article here. You've seen the numbers. What are your thoughts?
If it was me, I would expect Backlund to be a finalist, but I would not expect him to win. I think Patrice Bergeron should get the trophy, but it's one of those things that if Boston misses the playoffs, I think Backlund wins it. If Boston makes the playoffs, I think Bergeron takes it.
And why do you think Bergeron?
He just has a legacy of being one of the top three or four defensive players in the league while being good offensively.
If you look at the guys who are probably in consideration there, it's Kessler, Mika Koivu, Patrice Bergeron, Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Toews, Anze Kopitar, and Michael Backlund. And, you know, there's always one or two surprises, I find, especially the Selke Trophy. You always get one or two guys you wouldn't think of as a trophy winner. And I think after a season like this, you really have to award Backlund at least a nomination, at least a finalist. And
yeah, I think he'll be the runner-up, but or win it outright. I don't think he comes in third or doesn't get nominated.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Now, I can definitely see. I mean, we often see that the awards skew Eastern as well. I think it's definitely very possible that he could win this one. And I'm excited by that. I think if we can make the playoffs and start racking up some awards, we saw that last time we made the playoffs, it's always good for the team to have a couple more awards under their belt. And I don't think we've ever had a Selke Trophy winner here in Calgary.
No.
I'm just looking through the list here. Lots of repeat teams. Detroit's had Pavel Datsyuk 3 years in a row. Lots of teams. Bob Gainey won it 4 years in a row, but we've never had a Selke Trophy, so it'd be a nice thing to add to the Flames collection.
Yep.
Well, Matt, not a whole lot of new news this week about the Calgary Flames. We're sort of in that lull of the season, so I thought maybe we'd talk about a couple sort of Flames organizational issues and then some of the big future issues for the Flames this year. It's interesting if you look at this team and the way that this team has been built. There's always, you know, multiple ways to build a team, multiple ways to acquire players, but you either draft them, you sign them, or they're free agents. And for years, this team was not drafting very well. We had terrible draft picks. We weren't doing well. If you look at the current crop of Calgary Flames, 8 of the current Calgary Flames were drafted. 7 of them came through free agency and 9 through trade. So we're starting to see, I think, a lot more homegrown talent on this roster, which is really nice to see than we have in the past. I'll break these down for everybody. The players that were drafted by the Flames, if we include Rasmus Anderson, then he'd be in there. Michael Backlund, Sam Bennett, Lance Boma, TJ Brody, Michael Ferland, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Matthew Tkachuk were all drafted by the Calgary Flames. Matt Bartkowski, Troy Brower, Derek England, Michael Frolik, Mark Giordano, Chad Johnson, and Chris Versteeg were all free agents. It's weird for me to read Giordano's name as a free agent because, I don't know about you, in my head, I just always think he's a Flames draft pick.
Oh, I know. It was weird seeing that picture of him in a Coyotes jersey.
When he tried out of their camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the Flames needed some spots for a farm team, and that's why they got Richie Regeer and Mark Giordano, and it ended up working out fairly well.
One of those things worked out and one didn't.
Yeah. Which I think Regeer would have, actually, if he didn't get those two concussions in a row. I think he might have been as good as his brother, but NHL caliber defenseman. But that's another topic.
Yeah, we can talk about that another time. I think that playing on the same team as his brother might have hindered him, just like I think it might a little bit with Freddie Hamilton. I think he gets seen as the less talented brother. And then 9 Calgary Flames came to this team through trade. Alex Chiasson, Brian Elliott, Dougie Hamilton, Freddie Hamilton, Curtis Lazar, Ladislav Smead, if you still count him as a Flame, Matt Stajan, Michael Stone, and Dennis Wiedemann all came through trade. So I guess the reason I wanted to point all this out to fans is I think it's pretty interesting that we have if we take out Smead and Anderson, we have as many guys that we traded for as we have that we've drafted here, and we have one less that came through free agency. So I like that we have this good blend. You know, we finally have a lot of players, and those names I read, Backlund, Bennett, Boma, Brody, Ferland, Goudreau, Monahan, Tkachuk, probably all those guys that we'd say were probably the big impact players this year. So really, we're drafting our impact players, and then we're filling everything else up with free agents and, you know, then trading, I think, for whatever's left.
Yeah, well, and that's how a contending team does it. Like, you've never seen a contending team that was built through free agency or trade. Like, those high-end players just simply do not come available via trade or free agency. Like, you need to actually have a scouting department that works.
Well, and not just that they don't come available, but when they do, it's the desperate teams that make the deals and give up way too much.
Yeah. And with one exception, the Flames had Dougie Hamilton kind of fall in their lap. Like, that was an unexpected bonus trade, but that very rarely ever... I can't even recall the last time I heard that happening.
I don't know. I think it's one of those things you give and you get, right? I mean, we've made some trades where we've gone and grimaced and gone, oh, we shouldn't have made that. I would say something like the, you know, if we just look at it on paper from a hockey deal, something like the Phaneuf deal would have been that way. So you're going to give some and you're going to get some.
Even the Granlund for Shinkarik deal for something more recent, that might have not been the best trade.
I don't know about that. I think there's still something to be seen there. I also think that, you know, we're looking at Granlund on a bad Vancouver team and Shinkarik trying to make a good Calgary team.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think that, you know, it comes and it goes. And for sure, Hamilton fell in our lap. And, I mean, that whole draft just aligned. We got rid of Hamilton. We got rid of some picks. We got Hamilton. We still got the two defensemen we wanted, one of whom is with us now in Rasmus Anderson. So interesting to see that makeup, but you're right. And that was, I guess, what I didn't say is I wanted to bring it up because we are building this team like a championship team. You know, this is how all the big guys do it. All the big kids are doing it this way. And we're starting to follow that model, and we're starting to get good drafting and bringing our own kids through the system, which is fantastic. Not only are we, you know, having these eight players who are in our organization now, but we've got, and you and I have talked about this a lot too, we finally have some really good prospects. For years, the cupboards were bare here. And I don't know about you, Matt. I think that there's at least four guys in the farm who could really be knocking on the door for an NHL spot next year. And probably a couple of them we might see brought up here over the road trip. I think the Flames have to decide what they're going to do with Brett Kulak. I think it would be smart to bring him up as a number seven next year. I think Rasmus Anderson will probably make the team. I think David Rittich, assuming we re-sign him, makes the team as the backup goalie. And I think Mark Jankowski is going to really be knocking on the door for a center position. I think John Gillies you have to give a chance to, but I think he needs a better season in the minors to move up. And you and I have talked about Gillies before. I think he's a year behind in his development because of his injury. So I think we'll see Rittich promoted over him. But what are your thoughts on the AHL players?
Well, I think that the two main forward prospects that are looking most ready are Mark Jankowski and Morgan Klimchuk. Shinkarik is kind of there as well, but he hasn't been quite as good lately.
But, you know, I think Shinkarik could easily slot in here in a fourth line, maybe even third line.
Yeah.
I don't think we're looking at Shinkarik to be the next top forward, but I think he'd easily slot in here in the bottom six.
Yeah. Well, you also got to figure that certain players are going to be moving out of the lineup soon, one way or another. And some of these guys will have to get promoted, like Jankowski, like Klimchuk, like Shinkarik, just because you need to see what you have in them. And plus, they're cheap contracts, so it's a win-win. On defense, I think Anderson and Kulak are the only guys that are imminently ready. And the goalies, honestly, I would expect the team to go with two NHL goalies, not bring up either Rittich or Gillies next year.
Do you think Rittich gets retained?
Yeah. I just don't see him being in the NHL I think that they might want to, like, okay, you did great this year, do it again.
I can understand that, but I'm just thinking, I'm looking to its salary cap of this team, and I'm thinking they may end up going with Rittich. Maybe it's not what they want right now, but I think we may end up seeing Rittich here just because he's cheap, and then we can spend some money elsewhere.
Well, Johnson won't take much more dollars than what he's making.
I don't know if Johnson wants to come back in the same scenario.
Yeah, we'll see.
He was kind of brought in, I think, assuming he was going to have, I would say, probably more starts than he has. And if you look at him in the last little bit here, he hasn't looked all that great.
No. We'll see.
And you know, you talk about some of these teams like the Chicagos and the Pittsburghs. They all have a young goalie under tutelage of an older goalie. You know, we've got the Scott Darlings, we've got the Matt Murrays. They've all got that younger backup guy. Not as young as Rittich, but I would say less experienced than somebody like Johnson.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you have to just play the whole situation by ear. Like, you don't know which goalies are going to be available, what they're going to cost, what your budget is. Like, if the Flames are running into budget issues, then I wouldn't be shocked if Rittich gets the call. But if they have some money kicking around, I think they'd prefer a more veteran established guy, just in case the guy was a mirage.
I mean, yeah, and you and I have talked about some of the, you know, the options in free agency, and I can just see them wanting to spend a few dollars elsewhere. Yeah. I also think that we may have to pay a little bit more to keep Elliott here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we're in agreement. I think Anderson definitely makes the team. I think he's going to take what is now the number 6 spot, which is Bartkowski's spot. I think Kulak will probably be brought up as a number 7. I think Freddie Hamilton stays here just because he's a decent number 13. And there's really not a whole lot of spots. I know you're big on Hathaway. Who do you think has to move out for Hathaway to get a full-time spot?
Lance Boma.
So we move Boma, we put Hathaway in. What about for Jankowski?
Stajan, which I'm kind of expecting that, like, either Stajan or Brouwer gets taken by Vegas in the expansion draft, and I think the Flames will try to trade
the other one.
Stajan, they won't be able to trade Brouwer, but I think they would try to trade Stajan if. Or they could keep him and just have Jankowski start his career as a winger in the NHL like they did with Bennett.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you've got to commit one way or the other. We've seen some, I think, developmental challenges with Bennett because of that.
Yeah.
I think they may have learned their lesson there. And what about if Klimchuk were to make the roster? I mean, who else isn't going to have a spot next year? Those, to me, we've already talked about the obvious guys to move.
Yeah. Well, Klimchuk just depends on how Klimchuk's doing. Like, he might beat out Hathaway.
I think that we may see Chiasson not get re-signed in favor of Lazar.
Yeah,
I agree. Otherwise, I would say that he could take Chiasson's spot, but, I mean, Lazar's odd man out as it is, so I can't think of anyone else who might move out for Klimchuk. I think Klimchuk's sort of been up and down the last few years too, and I think he really needs to give us one more good year before he gets a full-time NHL call. But that does bring me to another prospect, Matt. A guy that we are high on when he came in, most Flames fans were, is Emile Poirier. And he's had some disappointing AHL years. What do you think his future is with the Flames?
Honestly, it's up to what Poirier wants. Like, he's on a personal leave right now, so I don't, and has been for a while, and we'll see. Like, I think he may end up just calling it a career. I don't know. I'm not familiar with what's going on in his situation, so just hope that everything works out for him and see what happens, basically.
So for those that don't know, since February 18th, Emile Poirier has not played in the Stockton Heat. He went about 12 consecutive games before there's any official announcement, and eventually Flames assistant general manager Brad Pascal told Rob Kerr of Sportsnet 960 that the reason behind Poirier's absence from the lineup was on a personal leave from the team. Nothing else has been given, no other reason. We've seen guys like that. Wasn't it like Dan Ryder who did the same kind of thing?
I think House did too.
That's right. Ryan House. These guys just kind of lose their passion for hockey. And it's too bad, when, especially when you're a high pick like that, because we want the guy, you know, to be here and to produce. But if he doesn't have the passion, then maybe that's for the better. I still thought that we could get value out of Poirier. I kind of look at him. Some people have said this probably isn't the best comparison, but I kind of look at him almost like a Pavel Brendel, where he could play for a bunch of teams because everybody thinks they can get something out of him. And I could see him sort of moving around the league every couple of years.
Possible.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Emile Poirier scenario. But right now, I think that he's being leapfrogged in the depth chart. And that's got to be hard for him. You know, he came in being one of the highly sought prospects, and he's quickly moving down that chart. As we record this show on April 3rd, there was an announcement today that the NHL has announced they will not be going to the Olympics in South Korea in 2018. Not necessarily Flames-related news directly, but this will affect the Flames. We probably have guys who are Olympic-ready. And the NHL has said that they've made an official decision and the matter is now officially closed. There's no talking about this, no going back. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Ever since they announced the World Cup, you knew this was happening.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a surprise.
No, I mean,
really.
They dug up the World Cup. There's also the World Championships of Hockey. But I think I said that to you last summer, is, you know what? They've dug up the World Cup. They're not going to go to the Olympics. They're trying to create their own Olympic tournament. And it kind of makes me sad because I thought the World Cup was subpar this year.
Yeah. Well, in fairness to the NHL, they're a business and they want to make money. Just like the IOC is a business and they want to make money.
But
they couldn't come to a financial agreement that made sense for both sides. So, you know, the customers lose out. But that's corporations for you. That's what happens. So,
but we've heard from players like Ovechkin, who said that he's going to go no matter what. You know the NHL isn't going to suspend or, you know, terminate the contract of a guy like Alex Ovechkin. So what do you think happens here? Like, if Ovechkin does say, screw it, I'm leaving, what's to say other players don't do the same?
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm expecting the Russians to win the gold medal, because I'm sure that every Russian NHLer is going to go if they're invited. And
see, to me,
I'm seeing a whole bunch of players that will just probably say, screw it, I'm going, and you don't like it too bad.
To me, I'd like it almost to be like the World Junior Championships, where a team can opt to give a guy to the Olympics or not.
Yeah, well, I think Ted Leonis, the owner of the Capitals, said that, yeah, if Ovechkin wants to go, Ovechkin can go. So it just depends. Like, Eugene Melnyk made comments about Erik Karlsson not being able to go because he's not Canadian. So, who knows how it's going to play out. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Team Canada looks more like a Spengler Cup team. And it's just going to suck. So, but again, it's corporations doing what corporations do and not putting their customers first. And
I don't know if that's necessarily fair. I mean, if this was let's say we're in a different market. Let's say this is the 2026 Olympics in Calgary. Do you think that the decision is different just because of where the Olympics are?
Probably. I don't expect the next Olympics, because it's in China, to be the NHL participation. And frankly, if I'm the IOC, I don't grant them the right to do so in 2026 if it is in North America.
Well, that's it. You can't pick and choose at this point, but I can understand the NHL's logic. I mean, it's in South Korea. It's in a completely different time zone. You got to shut the league down for 2 weeks, which does cost money. I think you could work the whole bye week thing into that if you wanted to. But like you said, it is financial. But at the same time, I haven't seen Olympic numbers, but I would wonder how much TV revenue there would be for games that are going to be in the middle of the night in Calgary.
I agree.
Like, you know, you're kind of saying it cheats the customer, but does it really? I mean, how many of us are going to watch, especially the qualifying rounds and stuff, how many of us are going to watch those? I know last Olympics, most people ended up just watching the medal rounds, and there's probably a lot of money on both sides lost there. So from a business perspective, I can understand it, But like I said, I wish there was sort of a happy medium. Instead of saying we're not going or we're going, of saying, you know, like you were saying with Ovechkin, hey, we would like to put Alex Ovechkin on the Russian team. We're willing to pay X amount to subsidize you for that. Okay, then Ovechkin can go. Or, you know, let's say the Calgary Flames have a guy like Troy
Goudreau.
Goudreau, or I'm thinking more like even a Troy Brower, and we say, yeah, sure, we'll loan him to you for 2 weeks. It, you know, and everybody's going to be playing without a few players then. So it either you don't shut the league down at that point, but you sort of understand that during those weeks, it's a chance to bring up your AHL guys. It's a chance to try out new players or new lines, and it sort of changes the flavor for a week. Or even if there was a rule in place that, you know what, every team is allowed to lose, let's say, one forward, one defenseman, or one goalie. And so everybody probably, I mean, if you look at the makeup of most rosters, everybody would probably get hit about the same. Then it would be a level playing field during that time. I think it's sort of rash to say we're not going or we are going and not finding some way that maybe we don't shut the league down to go, but the players that want to go and can go are allowed to go. Maybe the player has to pay for it. Maybe it's, okay, you want to go? Well, I'm losing revenue because you're not playing for me. So if you're willing to pay whatever your wage would be and give that back to the team during that time, then, you know, we can definitely let you go. So I think that there's ways to do it, and I think that's what we're going to see in the future. I think it's this Olympics is really going to make people understand if we miss it or not. It's going to let the IOC, it's going to let the NHL understand, do we miss hockey there? Maybe the IOC says we can't afford to do this without the NHL. Like, no one's watching, you know, Spengler Cup roster players play hockey, and we're losing money on it, so we need their help. And I still think we're going to settle somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I can't see, I mean, I think part of, if you look at a team like Calgary, part of their bid for a new arena is an Olympic bid, and I can't see this team going down without a fight to get a new arena, an Olympic bid, and have no NHL players. And on that, Matt, with the talk of the new arena, we also have the comments made by Ken King this week, the Flames president, who has come out and obviously talking about Calgary Next, the Victoria Park Plan B that we've talked about before. And he's used the language we hear from so many teams out there, who has talked about, you know, if we don't get this arena, we're going to move this team. And a lot of fans are up in arms over that. And I don't know about your thoughts. I'm not too worried. I mean, Calgary is a city that has a lot of money. Calgary is a city that our government always cries poor every year. There's never enough money to do anything, but somehow stuff always manages to get done between the feds, the province, the, you know, city, private money. I understand where Ken King's coming from. He's not the first one to play that card. That card's been played for, you know, number of teams. I think at one point the Oilers even talked about moving if they didn't get a new arena. So I'm not too concerned about the Flames actually leaving Calgary. How about you?
Neither am I. Like, realistically, where are they going to move to that's an actual better market than Calgary? Like, there's, I think the Flames are in the top 7 or 8 in the NHL for everything. So, like, it just financially doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, they want to optimize ticket revenue, yada yada yada, with the new building, but, well, that's just more finding the right location, the right costs, the right financing. Is there a ticket tax, yada yada yada? Like, it's just a lot of detail work, and it'll get done. Like,
I don't know if you're a UFC fan, but if you're watching the UFC before any fight, you know, both guys do their media conferences, and they talk, and they, you know, they trash talk the other one, and that's where I think we're at with this whole arena thing. Both guys are trash talking. Both guys are getting ready for the fight, and we have yet to actually have any firm details or a firm fight sorted out. And we have a municipal election coming up here in, what, October? So I think that that's going to be a big part of the municipal election. But, I mean, let's just say, okay, worst case scenario, the Calgary Flames move. They become the Quebec City Flames. I can almost guarantee you within a year, we now have the Calgary Hurricanes. Like, there's enough desire for hockey here, both with owners, fans, and the corporate market. We'll just find another team. Like, we're not going to be without an NHL team.
No. Like, if Winnipeg get a team back, Calgary will.
And it won't take nearly as long.
No. So, yeah, I my level of concern is hovering around zero, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is just, I mean, like I said earlier, this is some...
It's just posturing. That's
yeah,
all.
It's, and it's something we hear every time this happens. It's like there's a playbook. Okay, you need a new arena. Execute these plays. And if you go back, fans, look up any team you know who's got a new arena, whether it's Edmonton, whether it was, you know, an NFL team, an NBA team, an MLB team. At some point, there's always talk of moving the team. We've had it here in Calgary.
Oh, I know. Even Detroit, the Red Wings, there was even talk there. So, like, give me a break. Like, Detroit Red Wings aren't moving.
I mean, but we had those talks here in the late 90s when the Flames were desperate to sell tickets. Then, you know, if we don't sell tickets, we're going to move this team. And look at how successful we've been since then.
Since
so,
04, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I understand that Ken King is playing a game, but I just want to warn Flames fans, don't be too nervous about this. This team's not going anywhere. It might not turn out to be the way the Flames want it funded. It might not turn out to be exactly the project the city wants, but there's a financial vested interest from everybody to get this thing done.
Yep.
And if nothing else, I mean, in the economy we're in, it's going to open up jobs to create this thing. So I think we'll start to see a plan finalized sooner rather than later. I think we're going to wait until after October, though, when we have a new regime, whether that's Nenshi again or somebody else. I just think there's one of those things they want to kind of push off until the next cycle.
Yep.
Well, Matt, any other Flame stuff, or should we talk about the week ahead?
Let's talk about the last week of the season.
The Flames are
we're
done.
Finally here.
The Flames are done at home, and they have 79 games in the books now, which means that there's 3 games left, all of which are in sunny California. On Tuesday, the Calgary Flames go to the dreaded Honda Center for an 8 p.m. Mountain start time against the Anaheim Ducks. Thursday, the 6th, they play against the LA Kings at an 8:30 p.m. start time. That's a late one for us in Calgary. And Saturday, the 8th, their final game of the season in San Jose against the San Jose Sharks for an 8 p.m. start time. The nice thing is we just saw how we performed against these three teams.
I think we beat LA, and that's it.
You think it's going to be two points in the week?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at how we did last week. Last week, I had predicted 5 points. I thought we beat LA, San Jose, and 1 point against Anaheim. You were a little more optimistic last week. You thought 4 points with LA, San Jose. We got 2. So you think it's going to be a repeat?
Yeah, I think the Flames are going to rest a bunch of people. And.
But don't you think everyone else is going to do the same?
Yeah. Possibly. Like, I'm expecting, like, that last game against San Jose. Like, I'm not expecting Gaudreau or Monahan to be in the lineup, and probably not Giordano, Brody, or Hamilton. So, like, I'm expecting it to be an extremely depleted lineup for that game. So,
but I expect the same from San Jose being a playoff team.
Yeah, but we rely on our players a little more than they do on theirs.
See, you're thinking that we don't break the Honda Center curse this time around?
Nah. I'm hopeful, but, you know, might as well get the NHL record.
Would this set a record?
Yeah, I do believe so.
For how many losses in a row will this be now? I'd have to go back and count.
24, 25, wow. 26, something like that.
That's crazy. So
it's either going to be a new record or it's just going to be breaking our current record, one or the other. So
I want the Flames to win in the Honda Center just because I think it's
psychologically beneficial.
It's psychologically beneficial, and seeing that it's possible we see the Ducks at some point this offseason, I want to go in there with a win in their barn. I don't want to go in there with that psychological thing hanging over your head that we can't beat this team. Ideally, I would like to beat Anaheim and San Jose because we need both wins against playoff teams. I really don't care about the LA game at this point. But I think you're right. I think we see a very different Flames lineup going into this road trip. We've yet to see any recalls made, but I'm assuming that's going to happen. And remember, we're in California, and our farm team's in California. It's in Stockton. So it doesn't take that long to get players there. It's not like we need to bring them in and, you know, have them on the plane.
Ship
with
them
us.
Off. Yeah. It's not like calling people from Adirondack or something.
Or even
like
from Stockton to Calgary. You know, they're not traveling across the continent. It's a couple hours to get them there. So I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic than you. I think we're going to get 4 points. I think we'll beat LA, and I think we're going to beat San Jose because I think both teams are going to be playing
very depleted lineups.
Yeah, I think both teams will be playing their B teams.
Yeah.
So I'm going with 4 points. I still sit at a 9-3 lead over you this season, so I got nothing to lose at this point. But I just, I don't know, with the momentum we have, I also don't want to see it deflated to a 2-point week.
Yeah.
So we will see what happens, and that wraps up the regular season after that. So enjoy the last 3 games of the regular season. If you don't have one yet, make sure you go out and you grab a Flames jersey. Make sure you get yourself your horns, your car flags, and let's warm up that sea of red because we're going to need it come the playoffs. And not only the sea of red, but let's get the red mile ready to go. Let's fire that up and get ready for some postseason hockey here in Calgary.
Go Flames, go. And hopefully it's a good postseason against Chicago, Anaheim, or Edmonton. And hopefully we see some games beyond round one.
Well, we will know more next week when you and I talk next, Matt. The Flames will be back from California, and we should have the answer to who do we play in round one.
Yeah, and then we'll break down all the matchups, yada, yada, yada. So it we'll figure it out.
It'll be nice to have a playoff hockey episode. You and I are usually done mid-April here, so it'll be nice that we keep going.
I know. We don't even have a second or third round draft pick this year, so like our offseason coverage needs to be filled somewhere.
That's right. The Flames have to keep us busy.
Yeah. So I guess if we're not talking the draft, I guess the playoffs is an all right substitute.
I'll take it. Just this once.
Yeah. Yeah.
There better not be playoff hockey in the future. You better have draft picks, young man.
Yes, exactly.
But this year we'll let you get away with it. All right. Talk to you
next
week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat. And to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubourg. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.